Welcome to the Bloody Broads. We are your Bloody Broads. I'm Bhavna Sharma.
And I'm Jamie Howard. We are your horror guides from page to screen and everything in between. And this month, we're highlighting Black History Month by speaking about some of our favorite Black creators. Specifically for me, my episode is going to be a famous Black American actor, in the horror genre at least. And so consider this your history lesson for the month. I'm excited because I get to talk about one of my very favorite people, and Bhavna's graciously allowed me to use up the majority of our episode time on him. I'm going to cover Ken Foree.
Woo! I'm so excited for this one. I know we've already talked a little bit about him on our Dawn of the Dead episode, but
yes,
excited to dig into this one.
I don't know how many other of his movies you've seen or that you realized you've seen. Some people don't realize how many of his they've actually watched. Mm-hmm. And then especially for Children of the 90s, we'll get to what role he played, but I think people are going to be like, that's who he was.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yes. So as Bhav said, we talked about him quite a bit in our Dawn of the Dead episode with Phil. You can go back and listen to that, and we'll link it in the show notes. But he actually never planned to be an actor. He was going to be a basketball player because he's 6'5", for people that don't know.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, he's huge. If I know people that have met him at conventions are like, holy shit, that is a big man. And obviously he has that wonderful, magnificent, buttery, deep voice that I love. I still think he should narrate audiobooks. I'm sure he has, and I just don't know about it. But he was born in Indianapolis, Indiana in 1948. He was born on February 29th, so he's a leap year baby.
Oh, shit. Yes. He'll actually get to celebrate this year.
Yes, and he gets to kick off this month, I guess, but it's just nice that it's also his birthday month and we get a whole extra day to celebrate him. Mm-hmm. And his full name is Kentotis Alvin Foree. He's the oldest of four boys and he also has a half sister. And a lot of people don't know that he originally grew up in a housing project called Lockfield Gardens. And his father actually worked security there and had to work three separate jobs to keep the family going. So another reason why I really admire. Yeah. Like another reason I really admire him is that even though he wound up having a lot of really quality acting training, he by no means came from that background by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
During the summertime, he would set up a stand and sell Kool-Aid to the older boys playing basketball on his neighborhood basketball courts. We love an entrepreneur. Yes. And the basketball courts that he would be on as a kid were known as the Dust Bowls, which I think is dark humor on their part. But the guys who played basketball there were people like the NBA player Oscar Robertson. So I think especially in other interviews that Ken has given, he's kind of talked about how growing up in that environment and seeing that there were other Black men who were successful kind of pushed him to take that path originally.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually did not attend the same public schools as the rest of his brothers and sisters and his parents and extended family did. They actually sent Ken to Catholic schools growing up. I would love to talk to him about religious trauma one day.
I mean, anyone that's gone to Catholic school, that's just like your 101 for religious trauma right there.
Right. I would love to meet him, but I especially want to ask about his time in Catholic school. But he said that he was always acutely aware of the racism and classism in his community because he was sent to those Catholic schools. And the reason I bring this up is because there was this really pivotal moment when he was about 8 or 9. And he said that this moment is what carried him through his acting career when he would think of what roles to take, what storylines, basically that he could put social commentary in any storyline, which led to him really liking to work with George Romero, obviously. But the first time he got into a fight with a white kid, he said he was 8 or 9 years old, And it was the result of seeing all these white kids being able to enjoy this amusement park where black people weren't allowed in. He said that he and his brothers and cousins were just hanging out and that these older white kids, because of course they were older, picking on someone not their own size, started instigating a fight with them. And he said it was the first time he was ever called the N-word. And I know that broke my heart when he talked about that.
Yeah.
I think it just speaks to the fact that things that happen to us as kids obviously have a greater impact on us than the people perpetrating them realize. But racism starts so early. I mean, it starts from birth with, especially in America. And I always say, you know, if your kid is old enough to use a racial slur, like obviously the other kid is old enough to be taught not to use it.
Yeah.
So like I said, his interest growing up was mainly basketball. Part of it was growing up in the Lockfield Gardens area. And obviously part of it was being 6'5".
Yeah, that might do something about that.
Right. So he learned basketball by waiting for his older neighborhood boys once they moved away from Lockfield Gardens. He would wait for them to finish playing so that he could use the hoop in the alleyway between houses, which I think is just so cute. I love that. That's so resourceful.
That's so cute.
I know. It's just like I'm picturing this kind of like gangly teenage, not teenage, but like early tweens, you know, Ken Furry being like, can I play with his deep ass voice? something that was important to note too is that originally he had a friend try to get him involved in the professional basketball league, but he didn't realize what was going on. He thought it was just like a summer league to go play. And so he did actually play a summer in I don't know if it was the NBA, but he didn't specify, but he has said that he played basketball semi-professionally. So makes sense. But after high school, he attended Loyola.
Oh, Loyola.
Yes. University in Chicago. I know listeners are like, girl, that is not how you say that.
It's only because I used to work with somebody with that last name. So I'm
not. Oh, okay. Yeah. I just get tongue-tied. Yeah. So that's where he went to college. And he eventually studied acting at Michael Shulman's Performing Gallery in New York City. But he, again, had no plans to be an actor. He was really active in the civil rights movement in New York City beginning in the summer of 1967. And this is kind of where my knowledge of him had a blind spot. Like, he's always spoken in interviews about being involved with the Urban League, which is a renowned civil rights nonprofit. But I didn't realize that it went so deep as he worked with people in the Black Panther Party and these very historic institutions that are now historic. And it makes sense, I guess, watching back through his filmography and realizing the roles that he's picked and what he's chosen, you know, for his career. But I genuinely had no idea he was so involved in civil rights. And I really admire that. But this is how he actually got involved with acting. So originally he had gone to New York City to kind of be in the middle of everything, so to speak, with the civil rights movement. And he actually opened up a photography studio because he was going to be a photographer. He wanted to document everything, which I really just, again, had no idea. Another reason to love this man.
Yeah.
So he said, I lost my photography studio in New York City when it was burglarized. I lost my darkroom, my Leicas, which is a kind of camera for people listening that are like very expensive and a lot of money. I was thinking about what to do with the rest of my life. I was having tea at my friend's house, Cheryl Carter. And Cheryl's a very famous actor as well in the theater world. Cheryl asked me to come along with her to an audition on 42nd Street. It was an old theater in an old building. It was probably going to be condemned a year later. It was that run down. But the people there was a great atmosphere. I was immediately intrigued because I was looking for something to do. I thought I might be able to get a, may I take your coat, madam, type of role for a couple weeks. Just something to do before I decided what to do with the rest of my life. I went up there, read the lines, and I got the main role in an off-Broadway play, and I got good reviews. That was the beginning of my acting career. Can you imagine being so charismatic and so good at what you do? You go up on stage for the first time in your life and you're like, yeah, I guess I'll just play like a bit part. And then he got cast as one of the leads in an off-Broadway show.
Literally the dream. literally the dream. Like how many of us that ever considered a career in acting or in that world didn't have that dream of like, I'll just be discovered because of how awesome I am. And like this guy goes and does it.
Well, and I think part of it too is, again, the summer and the atmosphere that he was in during, this was 2 years after Malcolm X got assassinated. So there was a lot of Black creatives who were like, all right, it's kind of now or never putting out our work. And I don't want to speak for that community at all, but in the terms of American history, that timeline makes total sense to me that he was like,
yeah,
kind of like, all right, now or never, like I said. And I just can't imagine getting rave reviews from your very first appearance and it being, again, an off-Broadway show is wild to me. I'm like, I'm happy for him because I'm glad we got the rest of his career, but I'm insanely jealous at how easy that was for him. Yeah. I say easy, but the stuff that happened before, I think, you know, living in the public housing projects and that kind of thing. I mean, his dad was working three jobs and did eventually move them to the suburbs. But again, he clearly did not have life handed to him on a silver platter. He said, before I knew it, I had appeared in several plays and had a guest star role on television, plus a major studio production. I did join Michael Shulman's performing gallery. He was formerly with Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio. So for those that don't know, the Actors Studio is one of the most renowned acting conservatories you can possibly go to as an actor. At least it was at the time when Lee Strasberg was alive. I studied it in that technique in undergrad and in conservatory when I was in high school. And I think his timeline up till that point really shows the power in a pivot. I mean, I would be so depressed if I lost my life's work at a photography store. He's never really gotten into how he opened the photography store, which I would be very interested to hear about. Mm-hmm. But he really just, when I say went for it, he went for it. He was originally in a film opposite Richard Pryor for his very first film. And I want to make sure I say this right because it's like six words long.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the Bingo Long Traveling All Stars and Motor Kings. And that was in 1976. So he was on off-Broadway shows and then Broadway and theater stuff for at least 7 years before he did film. So from there, he famously gets cast as Peter Washington in Dawn of the Dead. And so this is where most of our listeners will know him from. And again, we've kind of talked about him at length in that episode, but I just want to reiterate, like, he was the first Black character to survive on purpose in a major motion picture that had a wide release in America. That is insane to me that it took until 1978. Like,
right?
Insane.
Like, it's insane, but it's also, given the world we live in, that tracks. It's just, fuck, damn.
Well, and he said, too, that people were coming up to him and they were like, oh, good for you, man. Like, you lived. And he was like, yeah, it's an uplifting ending. Like, he said he was not putting two and two together, that they were pointing out that he was the Black character that survived.
And yeah, I could imagine because it literally hadn't happened before.
Right. He was just thinking like, oh, you know, we get in the helicopter and we're fine or whatever. Like, insane to me. He has another connection to Romero that I didn't even realize, but he's told this story at a couple different conventions and in interviews now that I love. So he had actually been working at a theater with Dwayne Jones, who plays Ben in Night of the Living Dead.
What?
Yes, I had no idea at all. I did not realize. So, so he and Ben were working in the same civil rights groups and the same theater groups. Naturally, they ran into each other all the time. And he said that he walked out and there was a theater across the street and he saw Ben's face all over the marquees and the posters and everything. And he was like, oh my God, man, congrats. Like, this is a big deal, you know? Yeah. And he said that he was so shy about that movie that Dwayne said, all right, man, keep it quiet. Like, keep it on the DL. Because Dwayne had no idea that it would be this cultural, iconic moment. You know, like, he just thought he was in a cheesy zombie movie.
Yeah.
So I love that little connection that he actually knew Dwayne before he also became a black male lead in a George Romero film. But how he got his actual role in Dawn of the Dead. So at the time he was doing Off-Broadway, and it was a place called the WPA Theater in New York. And he said one of the guys that was also in the play was auditioning for it. And he was like, hey, there's this, you know, character that you might fit. So he was like, okay, like I'll go, basically to flatter my friend. And he said he went, he auditioned twice, and he got the part, which is crazy to me. I mean, that again, he had such a low barrier to entry, but I think that also speaks to how talented he is.
I agree.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. So from there, he goes on in all these interviews to kind of talk about his inspiration. And he always says it also goes back to that first guy who called me the N-word, which I, again, speaks to the impact that it had on him.
Yeah.
So he said that he used Bruiser Gaines, a character, as a model, but after reading the racial statements in the script, he said it certainly brought back the experience of being called that name, so I used it as a tool. Growing up in Lockfield, plus those years of re-education and inspiration, meaning his work with the civil rights movement, I brought that to the strong character that was Peter. The same could be said for Dwayne Jones's Ben. When you saw that character, a smart, educated black man who was obviously destined for good things, that was exactly what happened to him. I don't think people realize the power that those films had when they were first released. Mm-hmm. He said that when they talk about it, when he and Dwayne talked about it, neither one of them, again, really understood from the beginning kind of what that was going to mean. Because horror was not in any means seen as the up-and-coming genre or the prestigious genre. Like, if people harp about horror not being appreciated and the phrase elevated horror now, in the 70s and 60s, it was schlock. Like, people were like, oh, it's just a shock film. It's just blood, guts. As Jazz and Kat from Girl That's Scary say, blood, guts, and tits. And or blood, guts, and ass, too. I love that he harnessed the power of being hurt as a young child and put it into his art. And I think that's relatable regardless of what race you are. Like, that's
100%.
That's just so, that's a heavy moment for me. I'm like, I relate. So after Dawn, he went in to star on so many films, and I don't want to read y'all like straight from his IMDb or anything, but there's a few that I didn't even realize that he had been in until I went back and looked. So he was in, oh gosh, so many. He was in Nightwalkers, which is a TV series. He was in an episode of X-Files, which I didn't know about. He was in basically every major like late 70s, early 80s TV show you can think of. He was on an episode of The A-Team. Didn't know that.
Didn't know that either.
Like, what the hell? And famously, he was in The Lords of Salem. Mm. So he actually loves working with Rob Zombie, which I find very interesting. I would love to pick his brain about why. Well, okay. So he has said in the past that Rob is a very strong dialogue writer. And okay. I understand as an actor that he would enjoy that. You know, like I get mm-hmm. it. But he also starred in Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
Where?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't remember that. But I also have not watched that film in probably 15
Oh God,
years.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I have no idea. He was in so many iconic kind of B movies that I genuinely didn't know about. Like, I went back through his filmography, and I was like, when was he in this? Yeah. And then the one that might surprise some 90s kids that I teased at the beginning, he unexpectedly spent 4 seasons as Roger Rockmore, Keenan's dad in Keenan and Kel.
That was him?
I know. Every time
I tell
someone,
put 2 and 2 together.
Well, it doesn't look like him at all.
No.
Every time I tell someone, they're like, huh? So he has pretty much kept up work throughout the years, which I, again, find really admirable. He's never really pigeonholed himself, but obviously got pigeonholed by Hollywood. He has mostly done horror and action, which tracks because he's a massive motorcycle enthusiast. I cannot talk right now. He's a massive motorcycle enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And he has recently, in the past 4 or 5 years, talked mostly about these scripts that he's developing. He wants to get back into writing and directing. I think he would do a phenomenal job. The big one that he's, yes, I would die to work with him. Are you kidding me? The big one that he is pushing right now, he wrote a script about how the intersection of basketball and Indiana and then growing up black in Indiana and then the Ku Klux Klan. Because another reason he was sent to Catholic schools is because obviously when schools got integrated, the Klan marched through every major city and was like, you know, their racist selves. But they were saying by putting the black children in the schools, we're going to, their favorite phrase, you know, dilute everything. And so his parents basically figured out how to put him through Catholic school because the public schools suffered from white flight, where white families were leaving the inner cities and going to the suburbs. And so I'm not sure the details of how he actually got to the neighborhood, but he has talked at length about living so close to his aunts and his grandma and how they basically raised him, which makes sense. Like if you have 6 other siblings, like, gets a little hectic.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, like, and it depends on the size of your family too. Like, both of my parents, and I had my grandparents kind of live with us, but also had my other grandparents. Like, it takes a village, literally.
Exactly. Yeah. So I find it really interesting that he found his niche and then stuck with it so quickly, but he's really starting to drive home that he wants to make this script. So if any producers or directors are listening, let Ken Foree make this damn script, y'all. He has talked about it at every con for like the past couple years. And he's always really fun to interview. Give him your money. Yes, please, please give Ken your money. He's really fun to interview. If you go on YouTube and look up just his name, he has this really adorable interview with a little boy at a con. It's very sweet how they interact with each other. And then, of course, he was on Eli Roth's podcast during, it's probably been 2 seasons ago now. And he went pretty deep into kind of life before and after Dawn of the Dead, and how he met Dwayne Jones and talking about Dwayne being Ben in Night of the Living Dead. But he answers the best questions at cons. I love them. So someone asked what he would do in a zombie apocalypse. And he said he would, and I quote, do something crazy, like go to church and pray and then maybe screw my next door neighbor. The man is 75. He'll be 76 on the 29th of April, of February this year. And he's still got it. Like, good for you, my man. He's still kicking. And I know that I've said that he was attractive as Peter in Dawn of the Dead, but even for a 75-year-old, like, the guy's still got it. He's got some very cute, some cute quotes and moves that he puts on reporters at every con, which, again, I love. And speaking of cons, he also has his own horror festival known as Foray Fest, but he's only had it 3 times, so I hope he brings it back soon. He had it, it usually holds it in the UK. So he's had it in 2007, 2009, and in 2013. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe he'll rally and get it back if he gets that film made that he wants to make.
Yes, please. Yes,
but I just find him very interesting. He's also talked at length about how watching other people act is how he learned to act because he was thrown directly into off-Broadway. And I think that that shows through in his style of acting. His style of acting, it's very natural. And he's improvised a lot. So there's a couple things in Dawn of the Dead and then the Dawn of the Dead remake where he has a cameo as the televangelist on TV where he says his iconic, you know, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. Yeah. But there's a couple lines and other things he's done as well that he improvised. And he said he's spoken at length about how he's a big improviser, which I love. That's a creative freedom that I just don't think exists for a lot of actors. And it's really appreciated when we get it. And then again, he was in Lords of Salem, so very into kind of that type of character, if you guys have seen that movie. But I would love to see him play more comedy roles as well, like the dad. When I remind people that he's the dad in Kenan and Kel, everyone has the same reaction. Very funny. And he's been married to his wife for like 40 years, which I love. Very cute.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my deep dive on Ken Foree, guys. I really admire him. I want to work with him. And I hope that he doesn't retire before then, before we get the chance. But I understand if he does, because he's, you know, 75.
Yes. Sometimes people get tired, but fingers crossed.
Yeah. The thing that threw me off when I first started doing a deep dive on his life was that he had never acted before getting his main roles. I think he had done some, I'm sure he had done like some drama class in school or whatever. Like, you know, in Catholic school, you always have like the Christmas pageant and the Easter pageant and things like that. But in terms of like being a serious thespian, he really didn't get that training until after he'd started working. So again, I think that just speaks to his work ethic. I think that speaks to the quality of the work he does put out, and kind of a good reminder that if you have a gut feeling about something, to just go for it. Mm-hmm. And that works both ways, like as someone submitting themselves for a job or an opportunity or a role, or as the person that's picking the people. You know, if you feel like that person is just really gonna do a great job, I mean, obviously it worked out for him and Romero.
I'd say it did.
Yeah. He has said, though, something interesting, that the first scene when they bust into the basement in Dawn of the Dead, mm-hmm. obviously that's a very racially laden scene because they call the Hispanic people and the Black people in that apartment building racial epithets. But he has said that they rehearsed it. And he said once they rehearsed it, he was like, all right, we just got to shoot this, because it was too heavy. Like it wasn't even the gore. I mean, air quotes around gore.
Yeah.
He said it was the racial impact. And again, it all goes back to being bullied, not even bullied, just discriminated against and shown such hatred at such a young age. I find him very interesting. And yeah, I feel like I could keep talking about him, y'all. So thank you for letting me have a whole episode to talk about him.
Of course. Oh my gosh. I'm still reeling from the fact that he was Kenan Kill's dad.
And the fact that he is such an avid motorcycle guy, like it makes sense, but I mean, logically I kind of knew it, but he's in, there's a film called The Knight Riders, not associated with the TV show, but he was in an episode of the TV show as well. But when he was in The Knight Riders, he was one of only three characters that never rode their motorcycle on screen. And he was like, what the hell? I love all of his little tidbits. And I found so many interesting interviews throughout the years that I could pull from. It was hard to kind of pare down, like, okay, if we're going to talk about mostly non-Dawn of the Dead stuff, what else has he done? And then once I went into his actual movies and his filmography, I was like, holy shit, he's done so much. Oh, also, he has said that the first time he really understood horror and kind of what drew him in is when he was a little kid with his brothers, and they would wait until their parents went to bed and the TV would switch over to like old timey, well, he called them old timey movies, but this would have been maybe like only 10 years before he was born. but they would show the Universal monster movies, because he was born in 1948, and they would show Dracula and Frankenstein and the Wolfman. And he said that those Universal movies were his first moment where he really appreciated horror, and he was a little kid. But he said Dracula is like one of his all-time favorites. And I was like, me too. Like,
One of us.
I know. He was such an interesting guy to do a deep dive on. But All right, guys, we're keeping this short, sweet, and to the point as we do deep dives on our faves. But if you have another topic or movie you would like us to cover, please let us know. You can always find us as at Bloody Broads or as at Bloody Broads Pod on all social media. It's always linked in the show notes. Bhavna, where can the people find you?
They can find me rewatching Kenan and Kel to find Ken Forey's where they can find me or Forey, sorry. They can find me as the Lucky Charms. That's S-H-A-R-M-S on all social media platforms that you can think of. But I really only use Instagram and sometimes Twitter, but mostly Blue Sky. On Instagram, there's a little underscore on the end. Where can they find you, Jamie?
You guys can find me riding on the back of a motorcycle that Ken is driving. he is, again, I find that man very attractive. I'm at Glitter Burrito on most social media or at Jamie Kirsten Howard, all spelled out. And before we let people go, we're going to read a couple 5-star reviews that were left. Yes. We've been talking about it for so long. I figured we'd finally do it, you guys.
Yes.
So this one is probably my favorite. This is on Apple Podcast. It's from Verani 10. 5 stars. I listen to, all caps, a ton of podcasts and a lot of horror-related ones. Jamie and Bhavna have quickly become two of my favorite hosts. They are funny, but take horror movies seriously and bring on great guests. I particularly enjoyed the Get Out episode where I heard new takes and information about the movie after having listened to dozens of other commentaries. Keep it up.
Aw, my heart. Thank you.
This one is from Ms. Sheree, a friend of the pod.
Yes.
She says, 5 stars, a new favorite. I'm here for a show that genuinely loves the genre while also being honest about the movies they love. We need more of this kind of criticism and we need more Bloody Broads in the podcast game. I cannot wait to hear the rest of this season.
Oh, thanks, Sheree.
I know. And I'll save some other ones for later, but I appreciate y'all so much for going and giving us those 5-star reviews. They really do help. Yes. Most importantly, tell a friend to tell a friend. Like, subscribe, rate, review, share to all your social meds. And if you leave a 5-star review, we're going to read it on the pod.
Yeah, we finally are.
And not just the mean ones. Yes. But if they have a mean one, where can they leave it?
In a 5-star review.
All right, y'all. I appreciate you letting me go into a deep dive about one of my favorite people. Again, he's a special interest, if you will. But until next time, bye.
Bye.